Yesterday was the Feast of Our Lady of the Miraculous Medal, and I was reflecting on poverty of spirit because of the gospel about the poor widow and about the three young men, or the four young men, who were in the service of the king of Babylon, how they depended on God and didn't eat his food. Anyway, in the midst of that reflection, I happened to say some negative things about St. Catherine of Labouré, and I want to make a little correction here. My main point was right, but the source I had consulted said that she was illiterate, and so I said she was a nothing. She was poor, she was young, and she was illiterate. Well, she wasn't that poor. She was poor like anybody else in France in the 19th century, but just ordinary. And she wasn't that young when she received the vision of the Miraculous Medal. She was 24, or maybe 23, 24. And she wasn't illiterate either. She had some basic education. So I want to make that correction, partly because today is her feast day. I didn't know that the day after the Feast of Our Lady of the Miraculous Medal is the Feast of St. Catherine Labouré. So St. Catherine, she still is a great example of poverty of spirit. In fact, the more I read a little bit about her last night, I realized her greatness really is her poverty. Her greatness is her humility. She was a very ordinary person, so there was nothing striking about her. I thought she died young. No, she lived to 70. But she spent about 45 years, her whole adult life, serving the sick and the elderly. She is a patron saint of service of seniors and sick, infirm people. And that's what she was doing as her role in her congregation, the Daughters of Charity. So, and nobody knew that she had received the vision of the Miraculous Medal, almost nobody. Her confessor knew, and he was the one who made it known to the bishop, and the bishop is the one who said, okay, I have the medals struck, and the medals became enormously popular in Catherine's own lifetime, but nobody knew that she was the instrument. So that's a beautiful thing, that she never let anybody know that she was the one who received that vision. After she died, the word got out, and then they realized, here's an ordinary woman who was just serving the sick, and we didn't even realize she had this mystical secret life, and she had mystical visions of different kinds. She saw St. Vincent de Paul as a young woman. A vision of St. Vincent de Paul. Anyway, just to correct the story there. She's something like St. Juan Diego, if you want to make a comparison. Juan Diego was an ordinary fellow. He wasn't young. But it's amazing how Mary finds people like this, these hidden treasures, to reveal herself to them. Okay, correction completed. Now let's take a little reflection on today's readings. If you want to get a visual aid to what the lesson is here, you could just look outside the front door of the chapel, and there's a big pile of rubble there. The whole front of the chapel is full of rubble. And it's been like that for several days because of the holiday. So the workmen left on Saturday, and I assume they're coming back today, I don't know, to keep working on we're upgrading the entranceway there so that we can have a ramp for the wheelchairs. We had some visitors over the weekend, and I told them that we're just going to leave it like that. And they said, what's going on here? Why is all this rubble here? I said, we're just going to leave it like that because Jesus says in the gospel that the way to damnation is smooth and the gate is wide, but the road to salvation is rough. So we're going to have a rough entrance to the chapel. I don't think they realized I was joking anyway. So we're not going to leave it like that. But take a look at that rubble, and you'll see in there, yes, some dirt, some stone, some natural materials, but most of it is cement. Meaning the result of some human project or projects. There are some things that are painted, there's some tiles, there's some, I don't know, some vegan tiles or some ceramic tiles, and just debris from old construction projects. Meaning that's the leftovers of somebody's effort to make a beautiful house or a beautiful business or a beautiful garden, and it got torn down and thrown away, and now it's just fill, rubble. Now, we don't know whose mansion that used to be or whose house it used to be. It was not the poorest of the poor. You know, the poorest people, they have their homes are materials that just don't last. Like the nipa huts, they don't last. Wood doesn't last. We worked a lot with people with substandard housing, and the substandard housing is always collapsing. And the step forward is cement, a cement post and hollow block walls. That's the step from real terrible housing to at least decent housing. And then if you want to make it better, you can make the cement smooth. And if you want to make it better, you paint it. And if you want to make it better than that, you put up tiles and decorations and ornaments. It's all there in that pile in front of the chapel. Okay, keep that image in your mind. Then look at this reading from the prophet Daniel. We're reading from Daniel all week, except for Thursday. And Daniel is full of really weird imagery. This is not the weirdest one, but this is a strange vision. It's a huge statue, bright and terrifying. The head is gold, the chest is silver, the belly is bronze, the legs are iron, and the feet are a mixture of iron and clay. Well, that's just a weird thing. We wouldn't know what to make of it, except that Daniel gives us the authentic interpretation. This statue represents a series of earthly kingdoms. It's great that we read this in the week of Christ the King. In the celebration of Christ the King, we distinguish the kingdom of Christ from all other kingdoms. Well, here it is. The vision is given to King Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. We would probably call him a dictator nowadays. He was the absolute ruler of a vast empire. And he's represented in the vision by the head of gold. And listen to what Daniel says to King Nebuchadnezzar. You, O king, are the king of kings. Does that sound familiar, king of kings? It's a title that Jesus has taken to himself. But in this case, before the times of Jesus, it was Nebuchadnezzar. To you, the God of heaven has given dominion and strength, power and glory, men, wild beasts, birds of the air, wherever they may dwell. He has handed over to you, making you ruler over them all. You are the head of gold. So, absolute greatest ruler of his time. But not permanently, because he and his kingdom are going to be succeeded by another kingdom, not quite as great, silver. That one's going to be succeeded by another kingdom, not quite as great, bronze. Then every succeeding kingdom is a little bit weaker until you get down to this kingdom that's a mixture of iron and tile, fragile. This is where we get that expression in English, feet of clay. If someone has a feet of clay, it means got a weakness, and that's where you want to attack. Kind of like an Achilles heel, to use another mythology reference. The weak spot. So, and then, after all this business about the different kingdoms, along comes a stone which strikes the statue and the whole thing collapses. Worse than the rubble. In fact, doesn't become rubble, it becomes dust, and the wind blows it all away without leaving a trace. And then that stone, that mysterious stone, becomes a mountain that fills the whole earth. And Daniel says, this stone is the kingdom of God. God, the God of heaven, will set up a kingdom that shall never be destroyed or delivered up to another people. It shall break in pieces all these kingdoms and put an end to them, and it shall stand forever. Well, Daniel didn't know about Jesus Christ. He wasn't even born yet. But this prophecy is fulfilled in the coming of Christ. In fact, it's fulfilled in what we celebrated on Sunday. Jesus Christ, the King of the universe, a kingdom that will never end. So every earthly kingdom will end up like that pile of rubble in front of the chapel. Every earthly project, no matter how glorious it is, and we can look at the glorious kingdoms of the Persians or of the whatever, the Medes or the Romans or the Greeks, or whatever power you want to pick out now. Today, China is the rising power, and if you look in the mega cities of China, you see these high-speed trains and these skyscrapers and these glittering buildings, and it's pretty impressive. As impressive as the head of gold. But it's not going to last forever. Or you want to use local examples, you could go to, CCP or the Philippine International Convention Center or the Mall of Asia or some glittering sign or Solaire. You know, go to those big casinos. Beautiful and just glittering accomplishments of artwork, architecture. Well, I don't know how long it will take, but eventually they're going to end up like that rubble in front of the chapel. Everything will. It won't last. So what lasts? The kingdom of God. The kingdom of God. Jesus in today's gospel says something similar about the temple. So not only earthly kingdoms and secular powers, but even holy religious places. The temple to the Jews, remember, was the center of their whole world, of their culture, of their government, of their religion. It was the representation of the presence of God in their midst. So to say the temple is going to be not only torn down, but not even one stone left on another, is like to say everything you put your hope in and everything you believe in and trust in is all going to be destroyed. It's quite a devastating thing to say. And that's why they say, well, what are you? When is this going to happen? When is this end of the world going to take place? And he says, well, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Don't be afraid about the end of the world. There's a lot of things that will happen in the meantime, wars and plagues and earthquakes and whatnot. Okay, that's just part of the process. How can we say don't worry about it? Like everything we know, everything that we own, everything that we love is all going to be destroyed? Well, yes. Well, then how can we not worry about it? Because we have something that doesn't get destroyed and doesn't get taken away, and that's the kingdom of God. So if we focus only on the destruction of everything, the reduction of everything we treasure to a pile of rubble, well, that's a pretty depressing way of thinking. But it's not depressing, it's not morbid, if we realize it's the truth. And beyond that truth is something much greater and long-lasting. So this kind of reflection is to detach us from the passing things of this world. Not that we don't treasure them. What's beautiful is beautiful. What's good is good. What's valuable is valuable. But always in a relative sense. So that we don't get so attached to it that we cling to it as it collapses and miss the opportunity to participate in the kingdom of God. No. Here we are. We're in the week of Christ the King, so these lessons are simply reinforcing what we celebrated on Sunday. We belong to a heavenly kingdom. Yes, we live in an earthly kingdom. A mixture of good and bad. Every earthly kingdom is pretty much a mixture of tile and iron. But no matter how good or bad it is, it's not our permanent residence. It's not where we belong forever. We belong to the kingdom of God, and that's why we can face the upheavals of our times without fear. It's part of the process of the establishment of the kingdom of God.